I call the Environment and Natural Resources Policy and Finance Committee to order. A quorum is present. Our first order of business would be to address both set of meeting minutes. I think we could take those one at a time. And Vice Chair Burkle, if you would go to work on the first set of minutes, that would be great.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I've reviewed the minutes from March 11th and I move their approval.
Members, any issues with the minutes from March 11th? All those in favor of approving the minutes from March 11th, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes from March 11th are carried. Vice Chair Burkle.
I've also looked at the meeting minutes from March 13th, and I move their adoption as well.
Members, the minutes from March 13th, any concerns or issues with those minutes? All those in favor of approving the minutes from March 13th, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are carried from March 13th. First up, House File 1355, Baker. If you would like to start making your way along with your testifiers.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Baker, as you are not a member of the committee, I would move that House File 1355 be recommended to be placed on the general register. Members, I see that there is a DE3 author's amendment. I would move that amendment to get the bill in the shape we would like for today's discussion. I also hear there is a small oral amendment to be incorporated into this amendment. Ms. Taylor, if you could tell us about that change, that would.
Sure. This amendment would be to the DE3 on line 2.2, subdivision 5 needs to be subdivision 7.
Correct. Okay. Members, any discussion to the amendment or the accompanying oral amendment? Representative Purcell.
Thank you. Ms. Taylor, would you repeat that? I wasn't quite fast enough. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, Representative Purcell, it'd be on line 2.2, subdivision 5 needs to be deleted, and then insert subdivision 7.
All right. I'm seeing a thumbs up. Members, any further discussion on the amendment or the oral amendment? All right. Seeing none, all those in favor of the adoption of the D3 with the incorporated oral amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment as amended is carried. Chair Baker, to your bill before the committee, please proceed.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members. I first of all want to have the two departments we've been working with closely on this bill, to have them just explain a little bit more in depth about the DE3. It's more in technical nature, so I wanted to have them come and explain it. So if I could turn it over for that, Mr. Chair, for just briefly, it should be just very brief, and then I will invite the families to come forward.
All right. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is John Waters. I'm the Government Relations Unit Supervisor for the Department of Natural Resources. Today I'll walk through briefly Section 1 of the bill. Requires the Commissioner of Natural Resources, before issuing a commercial mechanical control permit for work with aquatic plants, to confirm if the companies are using scuba diving equipment and provide a sheet that DLI will be providing in a future date. It'll also require proof of completion of a third-party on-site hazard survey within the last year by a qualified safety professional. Section 2 will forbid the Commissioner of Natural Resources from issuing that commercial mechanical control permit for work with aquatic plants to anyone that's received one or more citations for willful violations of occupational safety in which scuba was involved, or has a contested or one or more citations for willful violations, again, where scuba was involved. This will also broaden the ban to bar commercial mechanical control permits for a successor person. And finally, it allows the Commissioner of Natural Resources to revoke a commercial mechanical control permit if a violation of that statute is discovered.
Looks like we have another testifier. Please introduce yourself for the record and go ahead.
Thank you, Chair and members. My name is Josiah Moore. I'm the Legislative Director at the Department of Labor and Industry. I'm here today because Section 3 of the DE3, starting on line 3.12, is a new section under Minnesota OSHA law regulating commercial diving operations. Subdivision 1 establishes what which operations the safety standards apply to. Subdivisions 2 through 5 are the new safety standards that would exist under Minnesota OSHA law, including a requirement for a scuba certificate to before work is done in the water, requiring a BCD vest be worn when scuba work is being done, that a spotter is outside the water, and that first aid and CPR training are required when doing this work. Subdivision 6 establishes the penalty structure that is typical for Minnesota OSHA, and Subdivision 7 requires the department to prepare an information sheet for employers, informing them of their obligations under this section.
Chair Baker, now that we've...
And with that, Mr. Chair, that is kind of the complexity of making sure that we get this right. I think, and thank you very much. I just want to give a shout out to the agencies. They've been very helpful in this area. I also know that the fiscal notes for this really are very minor, and the agencies have agreed to sort of just absorb these costs, which will be very minor. But again, this is an important bill to obviously to all of Minnesota, but to especially two very important families that we're going to be hearing from now today. So thank you again very much, gentlemen. Mr. Chair and members, I'm really proud to introduce House File 1355. I got an email back in December, I think with everybody else, and it really hit me hard. And because again, I know what it is to lose a child, and if the Aunties could come forward, that would be great. We lost two young, beautiful boys in the state of Minnesota in a very short period of time because of a work that they were performing with water and removing weeds and using scuba equipment, and they both tragically were killed in a very early part of their employment. It moved me. I am working on this bill very closely with Senator Bolden in the Senate. We want to move this thing quickly, members, because we know spring is around the corner, and what we are trying to do is make sure that we get this bill right so the providers are supportive of this, which they have been, the folks that are actually doing the service, and again, being extremely supportive and respectful to the family. So with that, Mr. Chair, I want to turn over to our testimony. We've got, I think, some online as well as right here. So thank you to explain the bill.
If you may proceed.
Thank you, members of the committee. I am the father of Brady Ani. As you know, two young men lost their lives working for companies doing weed removal. Both young men were using scuba diving equipment that they were not trained for. I know in Brady's case, in our family, we were assuming that he would be properly trained before he ever put on scuba equipment in the water, which was a totally reasonable assumption. I'm a firefighter with the city of Minneapolis. When we go into fires, we use very similar equipment to scuba diving. In fact, we call our equipment SCBAs. We just leave out the U for underwater. Fire and water are both equally fatal if your equipment and training are not adequate. I think about how much training I had before I was able to go into a fire, and I think about how much training Brady and Joe had, and it was almost zero. I am forced to think how many near misses there must have been before there were two fatalities. The only thing more tragic to me than losing my son at age 20 would be if this happened to another family, and it did. It happened to the Andersons. My regret as a father is that we were not able to move quickly enough and try to make it safer for employees. We have most of the pieces in place now to make sure that this does not happen again, but none of this will happen without your support to move this forward. You senators and representatives now have the power to save lives. I am quite certain that if you vote yes on this bill, that there most likely will not be any more deaths, but if you decide to vote against it, I am certain that there will most likely be more tragedy. The industry did not become dangerous once there were two fatalities. It has been dangerous, and fatalities were inevitable with the lack of training mandatory in this field. The Brady Ani Joseph Anderson Safety Act is the definition of common sense legislation. We are asking for no funding, and this is definitely not an overreach of government regulation into industry. Minnesota State OSHA immediately recognized the need for this legislation, and they want this to go through. Every scuba diver that I talk to is shocked by this, and they want this to go through. Every senator and representative that I have talked to so far want this to go through, but we as the families of the two young men whose lives were stolen demand that this go through. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Chair Baker, to your next testifier.
Hi. Thank you so much, representatives and chair. My name is Dina Ani, and I am Brady's mom. I just want to thank you for taking the time to listen to our testimony today. Brady was alive and well at breakfast on June 3rd and dead by lunch. Ripped from this world through neglectfulness so big in scale that it stole him from his life at 20 years old and from his family who loved him on day number 4 of employment. We pushed him to try this job. It was a fun summer job, and we live every day understanding that we trusted an untrustworthy company with our son. I just want to quickly share with you a few of the facts that were shared with us during the victim presentation from the lead detective in Hennepin County in DA after their criminal investigation into both the owner and supervisor of Dive Guys, LLC. What the sheriff found out that day, their department led them to recommend manslaughter charges for both of these men, which they slipped through. The investigators at the recovery scene immediately noticed Brady's weight belt was on backwards and inside out, so he couldn't release it. It was also too heavy for his frame. During their investigation, they were lied to multiple times by the owner, but their interviews with employees filled in the gaps from that day. The safety supervisor had gone to the wrong house, and it was a Friday. He was in a hurry. He put Brady, our son, who was the only new person, out the deepest, and Brady's dive partner said, "Hold on, Dom, who was the safety supervisor, I just have to go switch out my air tank. I'll be right back." When his partner came down the hill, he noticed Brady was gone. And he yelled, "Where the hell is Brady?" And the safety supervisor, who was a kid himself, was in the water gathering weeds instead of watching the boys. He said, "What do you mean? They lost our son." Then the investigators told us they needed to share the most egregious part. The supervisor never even got in the water to look for Brady that day. Brady was lost in the end for over 30 minutes. Of course, no one there knew CPR, so even if they would have found him in time, they would have not known how to perform this life-saving measure. We, his family and friends, are broken and forever incomplete. He really was such a wonderful boy, brother, and friend. Our lives have become a prison sentence that we must try and get through. When he stole our youngest son, he took his older brother's wingman in life, his best man when he marries, and his children's only uncle. We miss his hugs and smiles, and we understand his laughter will never be heard again. He wanted to be a firefighter like his dad, and he had worked really hard to get his ranking. In fact, he was supposed to start in the fall after that summer. His 21st birthday came and went without him, and he'll never even know what it feels like to be an adult. Brady paid the ultimate price for the negligent workplace he worked at that week. However, we need to do this one last thing for him and help protect future boys not to become the next Brady. We pray our beautiful sons will be the last lives taken. Please help us to make this industry safe. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony today. We have via Zoom testimony from a Mr. Anderson, if technology serves us.
It will, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to defer to my wife, Lori Anderson, to start with, please.
Proceed. Hi. Good job. Thank you. Hi, I'm Lori Anderson, and I'm Joseph's mom. I just want to say requiring a permit would provide a desperately needed safety checkpoint for lake weed removal companies. it probably would have saved both of our sons' lives. Our son Joe died last May 24th, working for one of these companies. The details are eerily similar to what the Downies just described. He was 18 years old, and he was a senior in high school. He had just started this summer job and was days away from graduating from high school. He was the youngest of our five children, and he had been homeschooled. He was hardworking, safety conscious, kind, servant-hearted, athletic, smart, and a good kid. He was the kind you never worried about as a parent. It was his third day on the job and his first day of putting on scuba equipment. The lack of safety protocols in the company and the industry and the lack of adherence to basic scuba safety practices was shocking when we heard about all the things that were done wrong by the company that day. He was told by the company that he would receive the training he needed. He had never scuba dived before. He and we trusted the company and the laws to keep him safe. We believed things would have turned out differently and he would be alive today, as would Brady, if the permit process was in place providing accountability and a safety checkpoint. He had heard about the job through a posting at Bethel University where he was doing 2 years of PSEO as a high school student. One of his best friends knew the owner through his church, and the owner was also a previous Bethel graduate. So Joe and we felt several layers of trust in his accepting the job. But those layers of personal trust were not enough. Better laws, as well as requiring a permit, a critical safety step, are needed. There were five willful violations found by OSHA, as you probably know. It was the biggest fine in the history of the state of Minnesota. No one was checking. We believe there would have been far more accountability to operate safely if someone had been checking. Requiring a permit would provide that safety checkpoint and accountability. If that would have been in place, we believe that he and Brady still would be with us today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is David Anderson. My wife, Lori, and I live in Plymouth, Minnesota, and we are the very proud parents of Joseph. I provided to the committee kind of a background briefing document, please, that has a lot of details about both Brady and Joe, their lives and the kind of young men they were, as well as sort of the requirements that you see in this legislation in House File 1355, specifically in two areas that we found in working with the Department of Labor and Industry. One was around scuba certification. There is currently in Minnesota no law today requiring that young men or women that get in the water and do this kind of work be scuba certified. That's just something that's got to change. Secondly, there's a requirement for what's called a BCD, and that stands for buoyancy control device. And the best way I can think about it to discuss it with you is it's much like when you go on an airplane and you see a flight attendant put on that yellow vest. In the case of water landings, please inflate. Well, if you remember those safety videos, at the bottom there's a red tab that you can pull on it, and it automatically inflates the vest. A BCD has the same kind of capability. If Joe and Brady had those devices on at the time of these incidents, they'd both be here today, ladies and gentlemen, because it brings you to the surface, no matter where you are. So those two elements, combined with the DNR permitting process, where people are just checking what these companies are doing every year, is just an invaluable thing that will save lives. The other thing I want to bring to the committee today, please, is urgency. Representative Baker has been just phenomenal in helping our family, and we understand that this bill is moving forward to a full House consideration and vote as early as next week. We desperately urge you to act with urgency here. Spring is coming soon. The ice will be off our lakes, and both the employer of Brady Auney and Joseph Anderson are still in business today. They're taking applications for work. More boys are going to go in the water. And without your help and your approval of this bill, people will die. It's that simple. I believe all of you entered politics to do the right thing, to right wrongs. This is a wrong, ladies and gentlemen, that needs to be righted. Please, please support this bill. Pass it today. It has been met with unanimous support in all committees in both the Senate and the House so far. There's not been one objection. We'd appreciate desperately your approval and support of this legislation. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Andersons. Next on the list of testifiers.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Waters already has spoken. I don't know if he's going to speak again, but I think that we cover that in the amendment.
So we'll just move to member questions, if that's okay.
That's it.
Unless there's anyone else in the audience that felt that they wanted to testify as well. Chair Baker, if we would like more testimony, otherwise I'll proceed to member questions.
It's up to the chair. I guess we feel like we've got enough information to move forward. I appreciate anybody that wants to speak. I don't want to certainly not deny them of that, but it's your call, Mr. Chair.
I think members are very clear on the bill before us today, so unless someone is insisting, I would proceed to member questions. Members, any questions? Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Baker, for bringing this bill forward. Thank you for bringing this forward. And thank you to the testifiers for being willing to be share these stories. I know that's hard, so thank you. I think this is a great bill. I guess it is, I come from a family that uses scuba at work. My dad used scuba at work. My brother uses scuba at work. My sister-in-law uses scuba in her line of work. All of them had to be scuba certified to do their jobs. Mike, it's alarming, and it's scuba's very dangerous. It's a very dangerous sport and activity. It's alarming to me that we have people using scuba at work where they're not getting scuba certified. Are there any other areas apart from this AIS, and maybe Dolly could answer this question, are there any other areas in Minnesota where people are using scuba equipment at work but are not getting scuba certified? I don't have a problem with this, but if there are other areas where people are using scuba at work and are not receiving that training and that certification, I mean, that's like operating a forklift without a license for that. That's a really big deal. So I'm wondering if there are any other gaps in the law that we need to be looking at.
Chair Baker, if you want to address
that. Mr. Chair, Representative Jordan, that's a good question. I think that what we have learned through working with the agencies on this was a glaring miss. I don't know of any other time when we're missing that. I'm not going to say the agency, maybe the agency wants to come and ask that. I think we've looked into this to a broader area. I think this is the one and last glaring hole. But again, the agency may want to speak to that, but I think right now this is the one spot that we missed and we're ready to move it and fill this final gap. But Josiah might want to do that too, just to be sure. Thank you.
Please reintroduce yourself for the record, and if you could answer the question, that'd be great.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Jordan, for the question. My name is Josiah Moore. I'm the Legislative Director at the Department of Labor and Industry. As part of these conversations, we have discussed sort of what other work is done in scuba. The main types of work that we've discussed with Chair Baker and folks have been sort of underwater pile driver, underwater carpentry, and the public safety dive teams that exist. Typically what we've heard about in those industries is that they have higher safety standards implicit in them than the industry we're discussing today. And so we're not seeing as much of a problem in that industry. That's the summary of the conversations we've had.
Representative Gilman.
Thank you, Chair, and I just want to thank the testifiers for coming and bringing this bill before us. Again, so sorry for your loss that you have to deal with every single day of your life. We will make this better. We will lock arms to make this better. My daughter is a commercial underwater pile driver, and she's had extensive training, and I love that you included a tender. I mean, so I believe that's the definition of somebody that's up top that would be tending. It's very crucial. It's a matter of minutes, seconds, minutes, that if there is something that does go wrong, that they get tended to immediately. So the fact that that was that's part of the bill, that's something that I would want to have be in there. And again, this is a very good bill, and I'm happy that we're going to move that forward. Thanks.
Any other questions, members? All right. I'm seeing no other questions today. If you would like to close us out.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just wrap this up. I want to thank the committee today. I want to thank all the bipartisan support that I've received on this bill. House file 1355 should never even be in front of us. We should have not allowed those two boys. Had we maybe been kind of noticing certain things out there in this world, the families of the Anis and the Andersons have been so brave to work and walk this journey to get it to us in front of us in a quick and efficient manner. They've been very open to working with some of the things that actually have to kind of make sense to with the providers. Again, this is an important business to a lot of folks in Minnesota, and we want to not cripple them, but we never again want to hear that if these very basic rules and policy changes that we're making, I can honestly look at the Anis and the Andersons to say, if these were in place, I know that those boys would not have been lost. So, members, the Brady Ani and Joseph Anderson Safety Act is the name of this bill. We do want to get it out very quickly if we can. It's met its final stop here with our committee stop here. Thank you for that, and I appreciate your support going forward so we can get this thing out in place right away. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Chair Baker. Members, I will renew the motion that House File 1355, as amended, be recommended to be placed on the general register. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? House File 1355 is on its way to the general register. Thank you,
Mr. Chair and members. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Next up is House File 78, Representative Davis. Representative Davis, you have quite a challenge today following that testimony and that bill, but I appreciate your willing to come forward and present your bill. And as you're not a member of the committee, I will move that House File 78 be recommended to be placed on the general register. This is a technical bill, so there's no testifiers, but I do think that after you introduce your bill, DNR may need to come up to address any potential questions. So to your bill, Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that is pretty difficult to follow up after. Members, it's just a good reminder of that it's so important of the decisions that we make here in this body. House File 78 is a technical cleanup bill. It has to do with the Cuyuna Country State Recreation Area, for short CCSRA, which was created in 1993 and is located on the Cuyuna Range in central Minnesota in the district I serve. The park has become world-renowned for its biking trails throughout the beautiful man-made lakes and hills, thanks to the mining that once took place during the early to mid-20th century. And since then, nature has taken over the area, and it's absolutely beautiful. I would encourage all of you to take some time during the interim and please visit the area. The park is conservatively estimated to have 50 to 100,000 visitors annually. Some have suggested that it's actually many more than that. Along with the creation of the park, a Citizens Advisory Council was formed and is known as the CAC Board for short. The CAC Board is advisory and makes advisements to the DNR. The CAC Board consists of local membership that you can see listed in the statute. HF 78 removes the language that says a representative for the Croft Mine Historical Park. The reason for the change that we're requesting is the Croft Mine Historical Park is the Croft Mine Park is located on the southern side of the city and has not been, operational for many years. We're actually trying to get a large portion of the land to be used for new housing. But the park is listed as permanently closed. It's been closed for many, many years. And the previous representative in this position resigned their position. So this change would take the board down from 13 members to 12 members. I'd be happy to answer any questions or if there's someone from the DNR here as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Davis.
If DNR wants to address this, they'd be welcome to. Otherwise, I will just let members know that I had previously motioned that the bill be brought to the general register. I will end the discussion by changing the motion that the bill be laid over, if that may or may not impact someone's decision to continue or to be wanting to add comment. Is there anybody in the public that would like to testify on this bill that's here today? I'm not seeing any members. Any discussion? Seeing no questions, I will make the motion that House File 78 be laid over. Thank you, members. Your bill is laid over, Representative Davis, and we will move on to the next bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
House File 1225, Scrama. Members, this bill is also being laid over, and I will move that House File 1225 be laid over for possible inclusion at or in a future bill. Representative Scraba, if you would like to introduce your bill.
Thank you, Chair, Co-Chair. You know, I got to get over the whole cold thing. Chair. Thank you, members. I'm sorry. I think if you're a chair, you're a chair. This is the way it is. And members. This bill was brought to me by some veterans who like to ride ATVs for various things, and 100% disability. We're asking for registration fees to be forgiven. There's, I don't know how many in the state, but it just seemed like the right thing to do at the time. And now that I'm walking through it with all the different committees, it just makes more and more, it feels more and more like it's right. I have a testifier here today, Mike Lindvall, and I'll let Mike have his say here, please.
Mr. Lindvall, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and proceed, that'd be just fine.
Yes, Co-Chairman, thank you for the time. My name is Mike Lindvall, and I am a 60% disabled veteran and also an ATV enthusiast. On behalf of the Minnesota ATV I get to wear two hats today because I also represent the veterans of foreign war who are in favor of this bill. Many disabled veterans rely on ATVs as a means of mobility and access to the outdoors, whether it's hunting, fishing, trail riding, or just enjoying Minnesota's nature. For some veterans, traditional hiking and walking long distance is simply not an option. This legislation, Minnesota has a long history of supporting its veterans and acknowledging their sacrifices. The legislation is a small but meaningful way to show gratitude. Veterans with total service-connected disabilities often live on a very small income, a fixed income, and face significant medical challenges as well as mobility challenges. Eliminating the ATV registration fee helps reduce financial burdens for disabled veterans who rely on ATVs for recreational and mobility. Many disabled veterans find healing and camaraderie through ATV riding and outdoor recreation. ATV clubs, trail groups, and veterans organizations provide support, social interaction, and a sense of belonging. This bill helps those veterans stay engaged with their communities. Mental health is a critical issue among veterans, and access to outdoor recreation plays a key role in improving well-being and quality of life. Bill 1225 is a simple, common sense way to honor and support Minnesota disabled veterans. This bill removes small financial burdens and allows veterans with service-connected disabilities to continually enjoy the outdoors and maintaining their independence. I urge you to support 1225 and pass this important legislation for the benefit of Minnesota disabled veterans. Thank you for time and your consideration.
Thank you for your testimony. I think that is the end of the list of those that signed up to testify before committee. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to offer their thoughts on the bill before we go to questions? Seeing none, members, any questions? Well, it looks like Representative Scrava, you can go ahead and close, and we'll move on to the last motion.
Thank you, Chair Heinzman and members. I did speak to Assistant DNR Commissioner Bob Myers there. We stepped out for a little bit, and part of it, he's like, hey, we have nothing. This is a good bill. We're good with it. So I was looking for him. I said, where'd he go? I thought he was going to come here. But I know how busy he is. So I just want to, as someone who served in military, I'm not disabled at all, at least not physically. maybe people think being here I am. But life is good, and I want to help people. I know last year we passed a bill to give I believe it was state parks. Rick helped me with this, where we allow, we paid for mechanized wheelchairs for people to get around, you know, and it's made a difference. It's really something we're finally, we, society is finally recognizing, you know, that it's okay to have an electric something, or it's okay to be mechanized, to use in the woods instead of being non-mechanized, because some people just can't get around. And this is just one way of saying thank you. So I appreciate your support and look forward to where we go next. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Scrava. And I will renew my motion that House File 1225 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. The bill is laid over. Next. Vice Chair Burkle, House File 1846. Vice Chair Burkle, would you like to move that your bill, House File 1846, be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move my bill, House File 1846, to be laid over. And I also have an author's amendment I'd like to offer right away if we could.
Please do. Go ahead.
Members, I have the A1 amendment in front of you just to get the bill numbers to match up with the need. The amendment corrects the dollar amount to match the funding that we saw the last 2 years, the $2.959 million. And it also increases the floor for these grants, so minimally funded counties would see an increase from $7,500 to $10,000 per county.
Members, any questions on the author's amendment? All right, seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment being added, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Your amendment is added. Vice Chair Burkle, go ahead and speak to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The county feedlot program plays an important role in implementing the state's feedlot regulations by providing on-the-ground support and having a local expert available to assist producers with permitting and compliance. Despite stagnant or declining funding for delegated counties over the past decade, costs and work plan responsibilities have continued to grow. And after successfully securing an increase in the last biennium, we hope to maintain that funding for the upcoming budget. I'm joined today by the president of the Minnesota Association of County Feedlot Officers, and he would like to share more about their work in this funding request.
Please introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
My name is Mark Kep. I'm the feedlot officer in Douglas County and president of the Minnesota Association of County Feedlot Officers. Mr. Chair and members, thank you for having us here. The mission of our members is to educate the public about livestock operations, assist them with nutrient management, and foster strong working relationships with livestock producers. Our members are often the first point of contact for many livestock producers within our counties when it comes to registering, inspecting them, and permitting for feedlots and manure storage areas. This helps us ensure that Minnesota's environmental permitting process and the requirements of Minnesota Rules Chapter 7020 are well understood and effectively implemented locally. So I'm here today to ask for your support of House File 1846, which provides base funding for the County Feedlot Program. The program is a partnership between the MPCA, Pollution Control Agency, and delegated counties to implement these feedlot rules and regulations. When these rules were revised in 2000, the program took on greater responsibilities while also gaining flexibility to address these local needs with the emphasis on field presence. Our members oversee approximately 13,000 feedlots across 50 counties, accounting for around two-thirds of the feedlot in the state. However, during the difficult budget years in the early 2010s, the funding was cut from $2.341 million to $1.959, and that stayed for a decade until the last biennium when they increased to $2.959 million. So our ask is to maintain that moving forward. Over time, our requirements and the requirements for feedlot operations and the inspections that go with that have evolved, and this additional funding would allow us to provide more of that direct support to producers and the public, environmenting both the environment, the farmers, and local stakeholders. And like everyone at the county level, costs continue to rise across that decade, and the workloads have gotten bigger, so our ability to stretch those dollars has shrunk. MPCA recently initiated a rulemaking process to update these animal feedlot rules. The changes will again require more communication and education to help producers adapt to any new rules or responsibilities that fall upon them. Again, like I said, we are that first point of contact for the vast majority of these producers. So when they have questions on any of these new rules, they will be coming to us. So these additional resources will help us ensure a smoother transition into whatever future rules are put in place. There should be a handout you're provided with more details on the program's benefits and the funding request. Respectfully ask for your support of this bill to help the delegated county feedlot programs continue our essential role in protecting water quality across Minnesota. With that, I thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Burkle, and members of the committee for the opportunity to testify today and extend my appreciation for Representative Burkle for authoring this bill. Happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Kep. I think next up to testify is Director Johnson. If you would like to introduce yourself for the record, that'd be great. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Tom Johnson, Government Relations Director for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. I appreciate the opportunity to testify on House File 1846. This is not the governor's bill, but the MPCA does recognize the need for these funds, and I appreciate the author for bringing this forward. The counties do play a critical role in the feedlot program, and as costs have gone up for the MPCA, we know costs have also increased for the counties. So, Mr. Chair, just want to bring to the committee's attention one nuance here. The current base amount going to the counties for this work is $2.959 million based on the language passed in 2023. It was, and Mr. Hagemeyer perhaps can speak more to this, but it was tracked by all parties as a one-time appropriation, but the language written into the law was written as ongoing. And so I only point this out, Mr. Chair, because the when we discuss the governor's bill, you'll see a reduction in the county feedlot appropriation. And this was in order to bring it to the legislature's intent of a one-time appropriation, but as the legislature's intent might change, that base amount could just go on into the future. So I realize this is an odd situation. Happy to answer any questions, but generally just appreciate the conversation, Representative Burkle and Mr. Chair, and happy to answer any questions.
There may be questions for you, Director, but since Mr. Hagemeyer's name was mentioned, I'll turn it over to him in case he has comments.
Mr. Chair, I do agree with Mr. Johnson. That was intended to be a one-time appropriation. We missed the one-time language in the bill, and then it was picked up in the base as $2.959 million. So this is the amount that is carried in the base. The governor does have a reduction of $1 million. So the governor shows a savings of $1 million per year, but this is the base amount that's in the budget right now.
Thank you. That is the end of those that signed up to testify early. Is there anybody in the audience today testify as well? Seeing none. Members, questions? Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Co-Vice Chair Burkle, for bringing the bill. I appreciate this handout, kind of just a 101 on county feedlot program. I'm wondering, though, it says that there's 50 counties that have the delegated feedlot authority. So I'm not sure if the question is to the MPCA or your testifier about what those other 37 counties do and how is that funded. Thank you.
Vice Chair Burkle, to whoever wants that.
I think Mr. Johnson wants to address that.
Director Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, yes, we delegate certain response for certain counties. We delegate. Otherwise, the MPCA administers the program in the other counties that are not delegated.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And how is that funding, the funding in this bill, then, does that not cover those 37 counties? And how is that same work that's being done from the state agency, how does that compare to the work that we see happening at the more local level? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Director Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I can get back to the committee about more specifics, but I would say generally through permit fees, the funding goes into the environmental fund. Generally, the feedlot program and other regulatory programs are funded out of that program. Those are appropriated by the legislature. So I think generally the base amount going into the watershed division, which is where the feedlot program lives. So if you see the budget in the governor's budget, or if you look on MMB and you see the watershed division, part of the watershed division's work is administering the feedlot program and working with the delegated counties where that work is delegated, and then where it's not delegated, working directly with the feedlots in those counties.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess this is perhaps more of an opinion question, but first of all, I'd love to see a map of which counties do this work on their own. Curious about, outcomes and like relationship building and things like that. because that's the model I guess I'm more familiar with, is the counties that do this work themselves. But I guess maybe my opinion question is, is it preferable to have the counties delegated? And if that was a perhaps more successful model in lots of different ways that you can define success, is there a way to get those 37 counties to be doing this on their own? Is it just a matter of funding? Of course, it's staffing at the different counties as well. So I'm just wondering sort of like big picture, we're doing this sort of two different ways. This is a funding mechanism for counties that are the 50 counties doing it a certain way. So I would just sort of be interested in your opinion of which is the preferred method. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Burkle, or to your testimony?
I can comment, and if Mr. Johnson wants as well, but I think whether it's preferable or not, I think on the local level, for instance, in my district 1A, we have two counties delegated. Out of the four counties in my district, two are delegated, two are not. You could talk to growers, livestock producers on the ground, and they have varying opinions, but I think for the most part, having someone local that they can contact that they know is much more preferable, I think, in the long run, and creates a better relationship between the livestock producers and those regulating them. So in the big picture, that's my own personal opinion, probably lines up with yours, Representative Purcell. Beyond that, I think just the goals of what 70-20 rules do, and maybe Mr. Johnson wants to comment on that, but I think overall, the goals are still met. It's just a matter of who's implementing the rules. But maybe Mr. Johnson wants to comment.
Director Johnson.
Mr. Chair, not a lot to add. We also see the value of having folks on the ground to have those conversations directly with producers. And so I think generally the areas where we're directly administering the feedlot program, maybe because counties do not want to take on those responsibilities, but where counties do want to take on those responsibilities, we see a lot of value in those local conversations.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Burkle. I'm trying to track on the money here, so I've sat in this and other committees and heard about, you know, the surplus being wasted, but, you know, it looks here like we provided additional money from the surplus, and if by one way you count on it, you're asking for additional spending, or another way you count it, you're continuing the spending that we provided in 23 and 24. Is that correct?
So yeah. Could you repeat the middle part of that question? You were talking about more money for, were you talking about the $7,500 to $10,000 for?
Representative Hansen.
No, I'm talking about, Mr. Chair, Representative Burkle, I'm talking about the appropriation of the 5.9.
The appropriation, the 2.959, that was in the base last year.
Yes.
Correct.
Representative Burkle.
Yeah, I guess it just depends on what your goals are, Representative Hansen. I think you and I share the same goals that we want clean water. I hear you talk about that often in this committee. And I think the fact that, as my testifier described, cuts to that funding happened in the past, and we are now in a situation where costs are up. We're just looking at continuing base funding.
Members, any additional questions? Seeing no more questions from members, Representative Burkle, if you would like to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, thanks for considering House File 1846. The county feedlot program benefits both producers and the environment, and it's truly a win-win, and I hope we can continue this important funding. Thank you.
Representative Burkle, do you renew your motion that House File 1846, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill?
I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
The bill is laid over. Members, we have reached the end of our agenda, although I would be remiss if I did not recognize the fine gentleman on the end of the table, Representative Gottfried. We've had an opportunity for members to introduce themselves, share a little bit about themselves, maybe their district number, and we should probably do that before we adjourn.
Sure. My name is David Gottfried. I am the representative from House District 40B in the Roseville Shoreview area. I just want to say I'm happy to be here and get to work with everyone in this room. So thank you for having me.
Good to have you here. Members, Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm just kind of wondering what Representative Gottfried's favorite chainsaw brand is.
Oh, Representative Gottfried, this was a question that I posed to members in a spirit of fun. If you'd like to participate, you may. If you prefer not to, that's okay. My go-to chainsaw brand was Husqvarna, particularly the 372 XP. It may be a pruner for others. I do happen to have a number of electric chainsaws, and I did mention that they are now my favorite in-tree model, but whatever you may like, go ahead.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and as it happens, I'm actually in the market for a chainsaw, so I'm open to suggestions if anybody would like to speak with me after we adjourn today. So thank you very much.
That's very respectable. Members, we are adjourned.